From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. By the time Governor Gavin Newsom held his noon press conference yesterday, talk on the federal level was already swirling around this reopening of the country, perhaps as early as May 1st. And if you were listening on Insight yesterday, we were joined by California's Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounoulakis, and I asked her about this idea of a May 1st reopening.
That there's not going to be a switch flipped where one day it's stay at home and the next day it's everybody back to work. It's going to be a rolling process. So if we think in reverse of what shut down, we're going to have to start it back up again. I think it's going to be a long time, for instance, before we have gatherings of 1,000 people. But how we step it back up, what that curve looks like, what safely phases in, is going to be part of a planning process. So I think the notion of from the last day in April to the first day in May of there being a dramatic change, that doesn't compute to me and what I'm understanding about how the planning is going for our state.
So the conversation about this May 1st idea continued throughout the day at all different levels yesterday. And here's Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg on Insight yesterday. I asked him whether he was ready for a May 1st reopening and whether that is even realistic in Sacramento.
I think from all I know that the idea of reopening the economy on May 1st is a mistake.
Then at noon yesterday in Governor Gavin Newsom's press conference, he announced that today he was going to make a detailed announcement that there would be parameters that the state would consider before modifying any stay-at-home or other COVID-19 interventions. And he also referenced that this planning was happening in conjunction with the states of Oregon and Washington. Here's what the governor said.
Yes, we will be laying out California's specific strategy and framework so you can get a sense of the questions that we are looking to ask and get answered at every level of government. The dynamic nature of this, where there's no pinpointed date where we'll do X and Y without having all of those questions answered in advance, why it's scientifically based, why it's based on public health data, and why it's a vexing prospect for every governor across this country, including the president himself, to figure out a way of doing this where we don't invite a second wave.
So that announcement from Governor Newsom comes today at noon, and you will hear the press conference live on CAP Radio. Late yesterday afternoon, President Trump was asked about the California, Oregon, Washington planning. There's a similar alliance by seven East Coast states, including New York. And to all of this, he said that his, the president's, authority over states is total. That was the word that he used, but there was more to his answer, so take a listen.
The president of the United States has the authority to do what the president has the authority to do, which is very powerful. The president of the United States calls the shots. If we weren't here for the states, you would have had a problem in this country like you've never seen before. We were here to back them up. And we've more than backed them up. We did a job that nobody ever thought was possible. It's a decision for the president of the United States. Now, with that being said, we're going to work with the states.
So that, again, is the setup for a lot of what we're going to hear throughout the day. I do want to start, though, in this hour with the president and CEO of the Sacramento Metro Chamber, Amanda Blackwood, because she's had the chance over the past 24 hours to gauge some response to this reopening idea from chamber members, as well as look at the bigger picture of relief in the immediate and in the future. So, Ms. Blackwood, so glad to have you back on Insight.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What is the reaction to this idea of reopening? And we don't necessarily have to target May 1st as a date, but in the next couple weeks.
So I think there's definitely a excitement about getting back to that point, right? Everyone wants to feel normal. They want to get back to what they were used to the flow of their business, to their customers, to really that sense of normalcy. And at the same time, I think you have a very real and prudent and responsible outlook saying we want to do that, but we don't want to do it too quickly. We don't want unintended consequences. We most definitely don't want, you know, a second wave. I think California has done a fabulous job on being mindful, being prudent, being cautious, and we are not seeing some of the triage medical situations that other areas have seen. You know, so your business community, they're ready to go, they're ready to roll, but they do not want to pull that trigger too quickly and put themselves further behind.
When you and I spoke about 2 weeks ago, and in terms of this pandemic, that's like an eternity because things have changed so much. But you said that business owners were facing the candid reality that business was going to be different and that it would be different in a way we couldn't have seen at that point. But do you have a little more of a sense now of what different is going to be?
Right. So I think you're going to see a massive change in a hybrid way of working that embraces remote access. So I say that in a practical context of, you know, some of the conversations we were having with members in the beginning of this, which does seem like an eternity away, was how can I just create a temporary situation where I can work remotely, where I can have my employees have access, where I can do delivery, where I can pivot. And now you're starting to see longer term conversations on what does it look like if 40% of our work hours are remote, and you're seeing people are spending time with their families, and some of these jobs that we didn't think could be done at home are being done at home, and they're being done successfully. So, you know, I think you're going to see a very real hybrid change where the sitting in the office 8 hour a day lifestyle has changed, and not just in those industries that are maybe thought of as more progressive. I mean, you may even see that in your public institutions, where if I can do plan checks, if I can do permits, if I can do, you know, all of those things remote, we're now finding efficiencies that we didn't know that we had before. And you're seeing access to, I think, communities having access to things that maybe they previously didn't because they had transportation issues, such as, you know, higher education or our community colleges. That if there is truly a robust online option, you may see more folks engaging in that way that otherwise wouldn't have engaged at all due to childcare or transportation challenge. But plus, I definitely think you're going to see that hybrid business model.
Excuse me. Plus the ripple effect of our health being improved and environmental goals that the state is trying to reach, communities are trying to reach. So there is so much impact to what you're saying. The chamber represents businesses of all sizes, correct? And you're hearing from businesses that are not even necessarily chamber members, I think, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, so we're the 6 counties, 22 cities. And a lot of our efforts, you know, obviously our members are extremely valuable to us and we have a very high touch. And we want to be of service to the business community as a whole, as we are all very intertwined. So we're getting calls from our very, very rural folks, talking about access to rural broadband, you know, and we're getting calls from our very, very urban folks talking about 5G. So it's, you know, it is the same conversation that all of our businesses are facing, really, regardless of where you're at. So, yeah, and we, you know, very, very small business. I think everybody knows Sacramento. Small business is the lifeblood of this community and is a huge employer, as well as huge healthcare institutions. And all of those are members of the chamber.
As you talked with business owners about that immediate need versus what they would need in 6 months to a year, the goal of those conversations was really to decide, what kind of relief do I want? Do I want and qualify for this grant funding, which I won't have to pay back? Am I ready to step into a loan that does require repayments? There is the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, in all of its detail that needed to be walked through. What's the feedback been? What pathways have businesses in general been taking?
So definitely the EDL program was the first out of the gate. And so I think there was a big crush there. And then the PPP came out secondarily. To be candid, I think appreciate the federal government trying to get those dollars into people's hands as quickly as possible. And it created a challenge for our banking partners who, you know, getting the regs on a Friday night or a Thursday night and opening up on a Friday, you know, they're physically having to create their own forms and their own intake process. So, all love to all those trying to get it out quickly, but there are some challenges with that. And I think the feedback at this point is the loan process can be challenging. And particularly if you are a small business, you may not have the level of robust bookkeeping that a mid-size or a larger business may have. You may have been doing your payroll yourself. So access to pay stubs and all those things that are a very normal part of a loan underwriting, you just don't have access to, and you're having to go back to your location and try to find that. We also are being very mindful, and we'll actually be doing a Facebook Live on it today, on just understanding, particular to the PPP, what you're getting into and if that is the right instrument for you. I think the last thing that we want folks to do is incur debt that may be low interest, but they are thinking that it is all going to be forgiven. And when you start to play with your real business model and ask yourself those hard questions, can you really keep that payroll on? You may find that there is a big chunk of that that is not going to be forgivable. And while it is 1% interest and while it is very low, if you don't pay that back in the 2-year term, you know, you're on the hook for that, just like any other loan. So if folks are collateralizing their homes, their cars, their assets of the business, those are really serious considerations that, you know, we just ask, just slow down, take a breath, work with your banker, you know, be realistic about, do I really feel that this bridge is going to get me where I need to be? Or do I need to think about perhaps pivoting my business, perhaps closing my business? You know, these are just really serious considerations. And we want folks to have all the tools that they have and really understand it is a robust tool. You should look into it, but it is not a get out of jail free card. And there are some strings attached.
So let's say more about some of what you just covered. To back up, banks got regulations for these loans on a Thursday night, and they were supposed to open the application process by Friday at 3 p.m., if I remember right. And then there was this race for everybody to try to get the applications in. I think some businesses who might not have had a banking relationship or a personal banking relationship might have found that that's incredibly valuable. But because the bank was the key here to getting your loan in, okaying it, and then funneling the money back, correct?
Right, right. And our banking partners were just overwhelmed by volume. I don't want to say it wrong because I don't remember which partner it was, but on one of the calls, I mean, they said, we're doing more underwriting in this week than we have done like in the last 9 months of our business. So, you know, they're not built for a crushing volume of applications. And the banks were forced to make some really hard decisions on, we're only going to work with existing customers, not to get too wonky on the bank world, but there's a know your customer compliance step. And some of that requires site visits to your location, you know, things like that. So a bank can't make a loan to you if they have not gone through those compliance steps. So if you were not already in that system, if you were not already a customer, it would be incredibly difficult to underwrite this for you. You know, so they were saying, if you already have a banking relationship with us, then we can go ahead and process that. And everybody else, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to wait. And some of our banks reached their caps, which is another challenge that particularly for our community banks who were huge heroes in this, they were quick, they were agile, but they, you know, they have to maintain a balance sheet and their lending limits become reached. So, you know, that's a challenge that they just can't take any more risk. It is a bank and they have to make sure that you can pay it back. So all of those things I think were real and were challenges, but on the positive side, we do have folks that are emailing us on a daily basis that their PPP has been approved. So, you know, people are getting through the pipeline. It is a challenging thing to navigate at scale.
So people are getting approved. I don't know if money is actually hitting bank accounts yet, because that step is still to come. And it sounded like there was some priority to the East Coast for where the emergency was more acute. Have you heard of anyone actually seeing funds?
We have not. So no one has received their funds yet, but they definitely have their letters in hand. And again, you know, we've got this task force call every morning with our congressional offices, and we are very vocal that while we appreciate our friends on the East Coast and what they're going through, we also need to fight for our folks here. So I don't think the pressure is being let off on, you know, when are we going to see this money?
And so for clarity on the PPP loan, this is really a cash flow loan. It's 100% federally guaranteed, but the hook and the difficulty for business owners is whether, as an employer, you can maintain your payroll right now during the emergency, because you have to be able to do that up front, knowing that this loan is going to back you up when the money does come in. And then you can use that money for certain restricted purposes in addition to payroll, but it's really tricky, and I don't know if you've been able to come up with some guidelines for who's right for the PPP loan, or whether at this point, if you aren't in the pipeline, you're not going to be eligible for those funds anyway.
Well, I would say, you know, to the latter part of the question, everything that we hear from the federal level is they want more funds into this program. So should it meet its max, no promises, but there is intense pressure to continue to fund it. So I don't know that, running out of money at the federal level is the concern at this point. To the former part of your question, and I wish that I could give you a worksheet and say, fill this out and it's a slam dunk deal, but it really is the business owner understanding, can I maintain 2.5 months of payroll? Can I continue to keep this on the books? And remember, you don't need to ask for the full amount. So that is an exercise that you can do with your banker, or, you know, if you understand your finances, to say, I think I can logically keep 60% of this payroll. So that's what I'm going to ask for. And I think that's kind of that danger zone that we've seen some folks. They're just taking their straight up gross payroll numbers now with the healthcare benefits, with the 401k match, all of that, and saying, yep, give me 2.5 months of that. And perhaps the more prudent choice is definitely apply, but not the full kit and caboodle, so that you've got some space there if you know that there may be some decreases over time. The other thing that we want people to be aware of is, for some of your employees, it may be beneficial for them to be laid off at this point, to seek EDD support with the additional $600. That may actually put more cash in their pocket than trying to keep 100% of your staff on. And again, those are very personal questions, and that's an analysis that you have to do as an individual business and an employer. But we really want people to know, you know, you kind of got to look at all the tools available to you and jigsaw puzzle them together to find that right outcome. PPP may be it, but it also may not. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, many of your local banks, if not all, and credit unions are offering skip a payment. They're offering loan deferrals. So you may already have a line of credit that, if you could defer that payment for 5 months, that's the bridge that you need. You don't even need to go seek additional debt. So again, it's a hyper individualized situation, but my best advice is just slow down, look at the options, really be real about where you think your business is going to be, and then make that right decision for you.
I know your advice continues to be talk to your bank too, or reach out to wherever you do have a credit line or debt. And to the point about the SBA or the federal program not running out of funds, the Treasury Secretary did say yesterday that something like $220, $230 billion of that $350 billion pot had been allocated. He said very clearly and directly, we are going to need more. We're going back for more. Infrastructure and some other targeted sectors of the economy are going to be shored up. And that was all a very positive, reassuring message yesterday.
Agreed. And I cannot emphasize enough how hard your congressional teams are working for you here, and that they are accessible and that you can reach out. So by all means, if you are a business hearing this and you're saying, yeah, that all sounds great, but what about me? You know, my situation has not been covered. Reach out to your chambers, reach out to us, reach out to your congressional offices, and tell that story. Because again, they are making decisions on the floor now on what that next, you know, stimulus 4, stimulus 5, stimulus 6, who knows, you know, as we prepare for recovery. And the more that you can give us as ammo to go fight for you, the better chance that we have bringing those dollars locally.
I'm talking with Amanda Blackwood, the president and CEO of the Sac Metro Chamber. Just a few more questions, Amanda. You launched the hotline with business counselors. This was available in a number of different languages. It's an extension of your hub, which was a resource center during COVID-19. How's the hotline going? And I will give everybody the number if you want to give or grab a pencil and a piece of paper.
Thank you. Yeah. Toll-free number. Can re-say it. It's 833-391-1919. This was a partnership with the Asian Chamber, and it has been an absolute pleasure doing this together. We definitely wanted to ensure that any business, member or not, that has questions on navigating all of this complexity had a place where they could go and speak to someone. So the Rapid Response Hub is still there, rapidresponse.metrochamber.org. All the information we're talking about is there, but if you want to talk to someone, just call that number. We have agents in English, in Spanish, in Vietnamese, and in Mandarin that can talk you through these HR questions, the access to financing questions, as well as just some of the basics, you know, that we keep getting. I don't know if I can be open. You know, my competitor is open and I'm not, and I thought that I couldn't be. What could I do? You know, all of those questions, please just call the number. We will get you connected to somebody who can answer them because we want to get through this, but we need our businesses to be strong for the recovery that is on the horizon. And we want to make sure you've got everything that you can in language so that you can navigate that.
That hotline number again is 833-391-1919. We'll have it on our CAP Radio website as well. So let's wrap this up again with this idea of reopening, how that rolling might look. And when we do, the ever-present question about the state's economy, the national economy, of course, but for the state, being able to navigate around a depression or avoid a deep recession and continue to recover from what the state was already trying to rebound from, Amanda?
Right. So what I think is very optimistic, positive news is as a partnership about a year and a half ago, a little over a year and a half ago, if we all remember, Brookings came into our region and they did an economic stress test. And the impetus for that was how much slower our MSA recovered from the 2008 recession. And we looked at, you know, we don't want that to happen. We want a resilient economy. What do we do? And the feedback that came from that is that your food and ag sector is incredibly strong. Bioscience is an exportable sector, and advanced mobility is an exportable sector that the capital region is very well positioned for. So we just concluded a year and a half worth of additional research and tactical strategy in partnership with Valley Vision, Greater Sacramento Economic Council, SACOG, and the Metro Chamber. And we are coming out with that report within the next couple of weeks. So we are very excited that as we look at recovery and we talk about what are those sectors that are going to set the capital region apart, not only in this moment, but to truly compete nationally, we've got, you know, the raw materials for that. And now it's truly just advancing those industries. So no, you know, there is a plan. There is a strategy. It's been worked on all this time. We're ready to launch. And we're very optimistic about the future of our region because we act so collectively and because we've been very future focused all of this time. So it's going to be a road to recovery for sure. But know that your leadership is engaged. They are focused and we are all in this together.
You started this conversation by saying there was a lot of excitement about getting back to a point where something feels normal again. And I really thank you for leaving us with that spirit of optimism, knowing it's going to be different, but knowing that there's a strong path forward. And of course, I think within ourselves, we have to all believe that that's true.
Absolutely. Thank you, Beth. And thank you for all the leadership you are doing each morning, giving us some moments of hope as well. Because we for sure are in this together.
Well, sometimes when I'm sitting here in the studio, I walk in with my mask and my sanitizer and I'm just by myself. I think, are we all out there still? I have these conversations and I know, we're as connected as we always have been, just in different ways.
Absolutely.
So take care, Amanda. Thanks a lot for your time.
Of course. My pleasure.
Amanda Blackwood is the president and CEO of the Sacramento Metro Chamber. By the way, she is the first woman to serve full-time as CEO in the chamber's 125-year-plus history. So we'll post a link to the chamber website. And again, I can give you that phone number, 833-391-1919. And you will hear Governor Newsom's press conference live today on CAP Radio at noon. Up next, some focus on the foster care system. As the governor says, some financial help is on the way. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.